in Middle East, you really cannot make a WhatsApp call or something. Everything is regulated. You can't have a VoIP. So from that stage, right, finding the right infrastructure, figuring out how to deploy to working with the existing infrastructure provider for their call center where they're logged in, right? And to figuring out, probably 100 hacks of how to make it work. To today where, it's like almost probably about 95% of the entire queries on speech on the call center are handled by Intentico bots for Toshiba in the Middle East. One common thread, right? If you want to be part of a great story with a client, you also need to pick up a great client. Somebody who understands you, supports you, and is there and values you.
Hello everyone, Ashok here. Thank you for tuning in to this 9th episode of Indian Startup Stories. Today, our guest is Satish Medapatti, CEO and co-founder of Intentico and a serial entrepreneur. Intentico is a Bangalore-based AI startup focusing on building cognitive AI solutions using NLP, RPA, machine learning, and addressing customer services in automobile industries. They have been recognized as Startup Winner 2021 in Amazon AI Conclave by AWS. Apart from Intentico, Satish is also an advisor for other companies dealing with AI products, and he's a visiting faculty member at IIIT Sri City in Andhra Pradesh. In this episode, Satish talks about his academics, career background, impacts of AI products and its adoption within small and large business sectors, his personal experiences in transition from employee to entrepreneurship, the founding team and the path in building products, thoughts in bringing investors into business and how to handle them, and their great customer stories, their narrowed focus in automobile industry and specializing in it, and much more. So let's jump in. Hi, Satish. Thank you for coming on Indian Startup Stories today. Welcome.
Thank you, Ashok. Thanks for inviting me and having me here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Please share about your background, studies, and your initial career days.
Sure, Ashok. I did my MBA from NIT Trichy. I did my bachelor's in mathematics, and I spent about 10 years close to across various geographies and various companies such as Tata Tinplate, Genpact, it used to be called as GE Capital those days, and then with Emirates NBD, which is the largest bank in GCC. And then I also spent about 3.5 years close to that in Innovation Labs at 24/7. So these were my primary corporate experience for about close to a decade, post which I have started on my own. And this is my probably a second or a 2.5 startup, you can say.
Wonderful. So what are you creating in Intentico? What's the product? Who are your customers?
So Intentico is a cognitive AI platform. And what do I mean by cognitive AI is the ability of a machine intelligence performing tasks that are, pretty much similar to what a human being can do. So what we do essentially is to mimic a human conversation wherever an enterprise has a conversation with a customer, right? We come in on behalf of the enterprise and we automate this conversation through machines, okay, that can talk to customers, much like you and me are talking to, right? So that is what we do. And it can happen in speech, it can happen in, chat, it can happen in a mix of both.
That's nice. How did it all begin, Satish? The ideation phase and the initial start?
The ideation was, because of my own experience in a previous company that I worked for, Innovation Labs in 24/7. So from there on, it was, very clear. So that was like about, 2012 is when I left, 2012, early 2013. So that was quite a long time back, maybe about 8 years back. And then I started a couple of consumer companies. The learnings have been immense. But then, once we did not succeed as much as what I would like to have it, that's when I said that, okay, I'm going to do something that I'm very clear about, which I've been there, done that earlier. With my prior experience and domain expertise. And then when I looked at this industry, honestly, this has not changed in a decade. Right? From 2008, I knew this industry. And, except for moving to the cloud, not much has changed. So what I said was that, okay, fine, if it has not changed so much, it's like a slow-moving industry. And there's a lot of technological gap and the way the products have been, was still in terms of a BPO transformation, not a tech-first approach. Okay, so that is when we saw that there's a great opportunity in this industry. And tech-first we started, and of course, we don't have anything to do with people in terms of process automation. That's how the D-Shift thing started. Somewhere around 2018 is when we started.
That's a pretty good start. Next question is a little longer. Please bear with me. Coming to different aspects of impacts of bots, like speech bots, chat bots, or any kind of conversational AI product. Number one, the small businesses which never thought of having their own customer support, it's new for them to have AI products. We now see the opportunities there. And number two, the big companies which had a traditional system or setup in place where people employed to handle customer support properly, and they are already familiar in cutting down the cost of running the business. So two parts of my question is, how do you see small businesses growing due to this AI adoption, and how big companies are seeing this adoption to cut down jobs? Or do you see the cut downs really happening, or is it actually increasing the employment opportunity?
So two questions in terms of what you have asked. One is about small business versus large business, and how does the conversational AI product adoption happen? And the second one that you're talking about is the impact on people and jobs, right?
Right.
So let me answer both of them, right? On small business versus large business, the needs are very different. Small businesses need plug-and-play solutions, cookie-cutter solutions, okay? There is limited integration, or at least the integration is almost predetermined. The tools they use, the kind of CRMs they use, the kind of ticketing systems they use, the kind of call center software they use, or the kind of chat software they use are all pretty much plug-and-play standard options. So when you're going to botify any of these channels, right, you are more or less sure that this is going to be about, these two or three or four type of software products. And if not, you can always replace them with any of the alternative products that you can work with, or your own products. This is how small businesses work. And the thing they look at is about pricing predominantly, and very, very quick access to the technology to solve their problems. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to large businesses, right, or enterprises, it's completely different. The first thing that they would want is, there is already a legacy of various systems. And most likely, the second complexity that you will have, right, is that they don't talk to each other. Okay?
Yeah, or in silos. Yeah.
Yeah, because I would have bought my call center software when I started my call center in, let us say, 2000, right? I got my chat software maybe in 2010, right? I moved to ticketing, somewhere later or in between, right? And each era, the kind of software they buy and the kind of technology that they continue to use would be completely different, and it would be built for that era for that purpose, right? So today, when you look back after so much time lapse, right, it looks obsolete and, hey, how do I even make all of these things work together, right? So this is when large enterprises, the solutioning is very different, because you have to make sure that all of these products that are a legacy just cannot be replaced overnight or anything like that. Even if you want to replace, it's probably a year. Okay. B, you have to make sure that there is a deep integration into each of these systems, external system as well as the client's internal systems, right? You might be using, you're a bank and you probably could be on a, Infosys Finacle, or you might be on a, Temenos, or you might be having a TIBCO as a middleware, or you might have a Banks, which is like probably some 20, 25 years old, right? So if you look at this enterprise, right? I mean, bank being one of the larger enterprise that needs a lot of things, right? That is where you require a deep integration as a B. Legacy, to continue the legacy, is your option A, okay? And then integrate it. And then C, the solutioning that you are looking at has to be in accordance with everything else that exists in this ecosystem. Like, you cannot just come in and say that, okay, fine, my solution is the greatest. This is the greatest technology that is available and it will solve all your problems. It doesn't work, even if the statements that you made are true. So these are the big problems when you go to large enterprises, right? One is a legacy of a system. B is the integration. C is about how you fit into this current ecosystem. Okay. And then, of course, you know, move the metrics, which are, you know, which could be anything, right? Which could be a cost, which could be a revenue, which could be a customer experience, whatever is the metric that, you're targeting. That is something that comes in as four. But the first three become very, very important for a large enterprise, right?
Yeah.
And you also get into additional complexities. Compliance is a very, very important aspect of any large enterprise implementation.
True, yeah.
Right, security, InfoSec. So you need to pass through probably about 8 to 10 gates before you can actually see your solution being live. So that's the big difference between this, right? And in terms of adoption, obviously a small enterprise can, you know, just look at it and it's probably a $50, $100 per month plug and play. I like it, I use it, I don't like it, I throw it and I start with the next one. But when a large enterprise makes a decision, right, it's at least for a lack of a, you know, better example, I would say you're probably investing in at least a 3 to 5 year time frame on this technology, right?
Yeah, it takes time to turn the big ships.
Right, absolutely, right. So that is the first part of your question. The second part, I have said that many times in my, you know, other interviews as well. Every technology that has come in, if you look at historically, right, it has always created more jobs, okay, than what it has taken, albeit with a different skill set, right? So you are ready for, I mean, you can take from an industrial era, right, industrialization era to 1900s early to, you know, Indian industrial era probably, and then you can look at Y2K, you can look at, you know, search and Google and all of this stuff, right? Every time you look at a technology that is coming in and changing the world, or computers, for instance, right? I'm sure, you know, you might be aware that there used to be typewriters, shorthand, so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Everybody who has actually reskilled, you know, the skill set changes. Again, it's there in research that for every one job that a new technology takes, it's probably creating about six jobs apparently. Okay. The whole thing is that, okay, are the six jobs going to be available for the same guys? Yes, if they are able to skill themselves or reskill themselves to what has been the market want. And if they're unable to reskill, and if I continue to be obsolete in my skill sets, and yes, of course, you know, you would be dead and your job would be taken, probably by a bot. So that's my take. So it's not essentially 1-0, but it's probably, you know, something in between.
Got it. Yeah. So question on the secret of no marketing from your experience. Your product Rand Bounty mentioned as it has 500K downloads, 5 lakh downloads without any ads or marketing. So what's the secret mantra behind it? How do you manage it, bringing it to that level of high count?
Yeah. So Bounty was a different experience for me because it's a consumer B2C company and the proposition was pretty good. And, you know, it was supposed to be doing like that. So my own thing was that, you know, my earlier startup is designed to grow through referrals and through virality. Hence, you know, I did not believe in selling it or marketing. But the current one in Intentico, the whole point is that I would say truly to be honest with you, I would say that it is our lack of marketing and sales skills, rather than why no marketing in Intentico, because we come in with a DNA of technology and data sciences core, right? So, you know, any problem looks like a data science problem or a technology problem. And our own inability to sell very well and, to market ourselves pretty well without any product or anything. And I should definitely give it to most of my competitors who do that pretty well. Maybe we'll have to learn that skills, Ashok.
Okay. So moving on to my favorite question, how do you manage the transition from employee to an entrepreneur? How long you took to see the change in you, and how did you make it? You can talk about your mindset and plan.
Okay. I think it took me probably about at least 6 months to get to the changes that are required from being an employee to an entrepreneur. Initial days. No, 6 months is a long time actually. Because
I hear out people saying like a year, 5 years. I mean, the overall plan to actually realize themselves, they are into the proper entrepreneurial shoes.
My point is very different. See, I worked about close to a decade, right? So you have to unlearn a lot of learnings that you did as a corporate employee and being a startup founder. Right. So there is something that is like very, 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 very different, right? The whole DNA, the whole structure, the mindset, like you rightly called out, should be very different. For instance, I used to think that, hey, why is this guy not giving me an appointment? I would not even, care for an appointment from a business this small when I was initially looking. So that would be a mindset where it is an employee mindset where you, for instance, I would have dealt with large enterprises, multi-billion enterprises. So when you go to a restaurant or when you go to a small business eatery, a roadside eatery, and the guy doesn't give you time, you feel actually pretty disrespectful of that incident. That is how your initial mindset would be. And then that learning, that unlearning and learning and relearning, right? That is what will take you saying that, okay, you're playing a role of a startup founder and your job is to sell. And your customer, if it is a telawala or if it is, a potikadai guy or a tikadai guy or whoever it is, right? A small shop, right? If he or she is your customer, then you better wait or try to find out effective ways of selling it to this customer, right? You may not go in and stand in queue outside the shop, right? But if you're able to digitally do it, probably in a native language, or if there's any other mode to sell it easily, you should do it, and that's your job. So ego is one thing that's the first mindset change that gets altered, because that is something that it doesn't, it's the market teaches you to not have ego. So that is a fundamental big mindset shift that you will have. Post which, the other things are easier ones, like you don't have people, you are the only guy who's, doing from A to Z of every other aspect. There is not much delegation because, in fact, you are selling all the time to your employees, you're selling all the time to your investors, to your customers, to your clients, right? So it becomes a part of you to be very humble. And it actually is a great equalizer in humility. That's how I would look at it. So that's what has been my experience. And it definitely took me 6 months, I think, to get into that mode and valuing what you do and focusing on the job and focusing on the work rather than anything else.
That's a pretty good mindset. So your company is relatively young in startup ecosystem, started in February 2018. And last week, your company was awarded in Amazon AI Conclave under logistics, manufacturing and transportation category, I believe. Not an easy milestone to reach in 2 years. Congrats on that. I was there in virtual conclave witnessing it, I believe on 28th of Jan. This must have come to you riding through a lot of challenges. Please speak on a few challenging instances, and how did you address them? Who helped you and how did you handle those things?
Okay. Thanks for reminding us about a couple of wins. It feels good, because typically as a startup founder, you're from morning to night, you're only hearing about problems. So, celebrating small wins and listening about that is good. Thanks, Ashok.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, I think I should give the credit to AWS as well as your story and all the mentors and people who have been part of that 10-week rigorous program of AWS and your story events. So they did a great job in terms of, you know, helping with mentorship, helping with fine-tuning certain aspects of the business and so on and so forth. Hmm. And most importantly for us, it has been a great learning in terms of the market, or, you know, maybe a product market fit, I would say, right? Initially, we were a horizontal, doing a conversational AI or a cognitive AI platform for about 3 or 4 sectors. Okay. Once we started looking at, you know, that market traction, right? And the market is the best teacher in my mind. So we have realized that focusing on one vertical is probably good. And we started with an anchor client, and we worked for about 12 to almost 15 months rigorously with them to understand all the nuances of that vertical. And that's when we were able to shape ourselves into a vertical pass business. And who helped to your question, like I said, for an event or the award, it is, you know, the 10 weeks of help that we got from YourStory and AWS. And in terms of the bigger one, I think it is the market that taught us, you know, the wonderful customers and clients that we have. They have been a constant inspiration in terms of understanding and realizing what is missing and what we need to aim for.
Okay, that's pretty nice. Now let's talk about your team. Did you start as a one-man company, then you got your co-founders and formed this team, or how did you manage it all around if you were individually doing it in the initial days? Or if you already had your team, how did you manage the conflicts you faced before you kickstart the businesses?
Okay. Great question. I think it is a team, to be very lucky about it. You know, we have always been lucky in terms of, you know, having a good team, rather a great team. In my first one also, I had a very wonderful team to start with. We started with the team, figured out who are all the people whom we need to have. Then we started going after the market or going after building the product. And in terms of Intentico, I was very lucky to have four of my earlier startup employees continuing to be building Intentico with me. So it was,
okay, that's great.
Yeah, it was a founding team, and you know, they're awesome guys. So I was very lucky to have them, and I continue to have you know, the key guys even today. It's been so many years of relationship with us. So that is one thing. It's always a team. A one man, of course, you can do, but sooner or later you would need the team to start doing it. And coming to the second part of challenges, and the third part is conflict. Challenges, I think, Ashok, are you know, innumerable.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You have a money problem, you have people problem, you have resource problem. The biggest thing being time and focus. What are you going to focus on within this time, right? What are you going to prioritize? Why are you going to build this, right? Everything is a punt that you're taking, right? So challenges are big.
Right.
And money, of course, is a big challenge always, right? How are you going to pay? Like, the cycle of 30th and first moves very fast when you're a founder. Right. When you're an employee, it's probably the longest. That's the Einstein's relativity sort of example, right?
True.
So those are all the challenges I would not want to dwell into, because you know, they're innumerable. Each of them is a different challenge. At different stages, teach you how to overcome different challenges, right? Where the initial stages, product is not built, you have a product. You don't know your first customer, how to get your first customer, go-to-market strategy, initial 5 customers, 10 customers, so on and so forth, right? And in terms of conflict, that's a fantastic question in my mind that you have asked, because it exists everywhere. It exists in the smallest nuances of a product feature, and it exists in the biggest strategy of the company that you're taking. And the people who are with you are definitely going to ask questions. So how we resolved is, I always had a framework for conflict management. There are multiple frameworks out there. And I used to follow one of them, or whatever is convenient to me at that point of the time. So the first thing is, that is the goal aligned or not? That is the first thing that I used to be very clear about with all my founding team. Saying that, hey, this is what we are going to achieve. And why are we going to achieve this, and why this goal and why not something else, is because of ABC reasons. Okay, so this is how I used to start. And was it convincing enough for them, or was it not convincing enough for them? They would obviously come back and say, hey, you know what, Satish, this makes sense, but this you say is not making sense. And then we will have a very healthy debate, keeping aside anything that is personal or opinionated, and having the goal and the objectives in mind. So once you have that, right, it becomes very easy to have a very healthy discussion. And at the end of it comes down to data. It also comes down to a bit of a gut, and it comes out to the founder's bet on what you think is probably going to work, right? So once you make this why we are doing what we are doing very clear to everyone, and then there's a sound logic to it, eventually the conflicts are going to be very, very limited.
Right. So you're having the goal as a common objective and a framework to handle the conflicts. Nice.
Right. See, like, how assertive are you, right? How knowledgeable are you in terms of the goal? Everything else adds to that. But if the common goal and the common good is same, and if you are as involved as everybody else, I don't see a reason why conflict will become a big issue. Or at least I was lucky enough to have people who have always understood, respected, and worked towards the single most goal.
Okay, that's nice. And people having the common ideas and common skills, how responsibilities are shared? You may have to think in financial aspects, and some need to think in marketing aspects. So how, when you are starting as a company, how do you handle the responsibility sharing?
Okay, so the responsibility has always been clear in terms of what is the best skill set and what are you passionate about that you bring in. So it's a combination of this. I may be extremely passionate about marketing, but I don't know zilch about it, let's say. Somebody is not very passionate but can do it. So at the initial, again, everything depends on the evolutionary stage of the startup. In the initial stage, of course, as a founder, you take up everything and anything that is left out. You don't have a choice, right? Mm-hmm. So you will just go ahead and say that, hey, can we build this product, and be very, very limited with sharing the responsibility of what can be achieved by your team at the best level that is possible for you as a company. So once that is done, everything else could be mediocre, but you are going to go ahead with that. And then the second stage is when, you know, you have something and you probably have to start selling it, or you probably have to start looking at it, or you probably have to even experiment with features or get a customer feedback or understand what is missing or something in terms of the product market fit. That's when you need to take the bulk of the work and start taking supporting functions from others, right? And there will always be people, if your team is good and if they're aligned to your vision, you will always find them coming voluntarily and asking for, is there anything that I can, you know, do? For instance, yes. I'll give you a quick example, right? We have data scientists who are very, very good and top class. But when I ask, saying that, hey, can you please get me this report? It's just probably a very complex SQL query, or probably a JavaScript, or, you know, probably a node. And it has got nothing to do with his or her skill set in terms of data science. And it's probably like, hey, it's like you can get it done by an intern or a two-year experienced person, something like that, right? But you will not hear those things coming out, and they'll say, okay, how important is it that this report has to go? That would be the question that they would ask you. Okay. And why is it important? So if you are able to answer this, you will always find them sharing the responsibility. And they also understand that you probably won't have enough time or ability or knowledge or even the skill set to get it done. Like, what could be a 3-hour job for a data scientist, right? Could probably take you 3 days, right? So it is just a balance between what is the best way to go about with that, right? So that is how peer responsibilities are shared in the initial stages. And as you start growing, you know, you have a CTO, then the technology is obviously becomes his baby. You're not going to touch it. You're going to look at only the platform level, or, you know, at a market level, what changes do you need in the tech side, right? You're not going to worry about scaling, reliability, you know, all of that stuff. So that's how the responsibilities will start. I think it is evolving as the company evolves. And initially, as a founder, you won't have anything. So that's how I look at it.
Okay, great. Yeah. Can you talk about funding you managed to bootstrap your business? Any investors experience? How did it all get started in the initial days of company?
I have a lot of prior experience because I've been running startups for a long time now. In terms of, yeah, it's always good to bootstrap, build a small MVP, a minimum viable product, show at least a customer or a traction, and preferably a paying customer. And if you have that, I think that's when you should start looking at having an angel round. In our journey, we always bootstrapped initially, put in my own money, put in my own time and effort, moved it to some extent, and then it becomes imperative that you start raising money from the market. Depending on the stage, it could be an angel round, it could be a seed round, right? So that is how it goes. In terms of challenges, you should be very, like I said, right? It is a business that you are pitching. There is nothing absolutely personal about either the investor or about you, right? So it is about the business. Yeah. Somebody may like it, somebody may not like it. So once you are passionate about your business, but dispassionate about the result of what you pitched, right? Hey, why did I not get this? Why did this investor not invest in me? Is this guy better than me? Well, you know, that is something very less. The moment you get into this mode, your chances of success are going to be proportionally reduced. And the moment you start thinking about it, hey, this is a business. This is what I am passionate about. I have put in my money. I have put in my time. This is how I look at it, the market. I may be wrong. I may be completely wrong. I may be partially wrong. I may be absolutely right. Right? Nobody knows the answer to what will happen. So it is about the conviction that you are going to go with the investor. And the investor has, mind you, the time he or she is giving is very good. And you can, if you can learn something from that discussion, it is great. There has no obligation for him or her to put in the money. So as long as you go with this mind frame, right, it becomes very easy. You will not have any a negative mindset in terms of approaching investors. Yeah, okay, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. He didn't like it. She didn't like it, right? She doesn't believe in that business. That's fine, right? Somebody believes in gardening. Somebody may say, why do you garden, right? So, you know, there could be 10,000 reasons on each side. So that is one thing that you will not face challenges when you have. And genuinely try to answer the questions that an investor has, because the investor is not trying to put you down or something. He or she has his own frame of investment thesis, investment mind frame, and he or she would have seen success in moving in one trajectory, right? That is working for him or her. So they'll always look at it from their historical learnings and their thesis. And if you don't fit in, you don't fit in, right? So
it's a unique formula for them.
Right. So there's nothing absolutely for you to be feeling bad or for them to be feeling it. It is just a business, and you know, it could be going whichever way. We don't know. It could be a decacon, or it could be a, you know, small business. We don't know the answer, or it could die, right? Which most of the businesses do. So that is one challenge that if you overcome, you will not face too many challenges. And be well prepared, right? You cannot say that I don't know the basics of this business, or I haven't spoken to 10 customers, right? Or I am looking at changing the world without knowing how, right? So these are all the things. Like, what is the validation for every point that you make? If you say the market is very big, right? On an average, if you say anything, you take it, a market will always be $1 trillion from a top-down approach. But if you say, if you worked out the market, if you say that this is what happens in this X company, which is my customer, and this is what I'm making it, and like this, so many companies are there, and probably I'm going to go after X percentage of these companies in Y geographies, and all of this will amount to, you know, whatever, $1 billion, X billion dollar, or X $100 million, right? So once you have this working out very clear, and all of this is obviously assumption. You have no guarantee that the second guy is going to buy similar to the first guy, right? You are just having your thesis of how this problem is solved by your solution, and why would they buy, right? Well, which customer persona buys. So once you have this, you have a thesis of your own business, and it is about conviction and about the hard work that you would have done, right? And most FAQs are very standardized. I mean, today there is so much on the internet that if you actually go through for about a week or 10 days, you probably know everything. right?
Yeah, yeah. Always well-prepared stats have an edge.
Right. And what you don't know, you don't know. Like, there would be a question, like, why can't two people come out of, like, you know, I find this question, hey, why can't, you know, why can't I start? Of course, anybody can start anything. Why can't Google do this? Why can't Microsoft do this? Or, you know, why can't two kids out of IIT Bombay do this? Right. These questions are very arbitrary. Typical investors ask you these questions. There is no answer to why can't, right? Because why can't you construct a metro? Why can't you build a steel plant? There is no answer to that, right? Yeah. You can, of course, everything is technically possible, but how much is it plausible is something that you need to answer. So there is still a right question because the investor is trying to get at what is your moat or, you know, competitive advantage, right? What is your defense? So he's just trying to figure out whether you have a conviction or whether you have worked out something or whether there is something truly unique about, you know, a competitive advantage that you have built, right? So it is about that rather than trying to say that, okay, yeah, if you have, you know, 25,000 crores, you can just go ahead and build a steel plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Both ways are there, challenges. So if you're well prepared, you will be able to answer this question. And get the intent of the investor. The intent of the investor is to figure out whether it fits his thesis or not. So if you, as long as you're good with that, I think you should be good.
Great.
Sorry, it was a long answer, I think, right?
No, but much needed answer. Thank you. So when was the first moment of relief in Intentico since the inception? Did you get it from any MVPs out of it or any initial product which gave you that relief?
I think every day is a challenge. I don't see that relief even today. But there are probably a few minutes of relief when you actually deploy and, you know, the next 7 days, nothing comes down and nothing goes wrong. And the customer is not reaching out to you. It's like, wow.
Yeah. And unless there is some complaint, right? You are in a good shape.
Right. Absolutely. So that is what I would look at. And I don't think there's any relief or anything.
Okay. Any specific customer success stories, which is a kind of a pride moment for you, like being part of your customer's journey?
Yes. A couple of customers or many, all of them, most of them.
Great.
I think I would like to quote two of them, which I'm at liberty to quote. One is one of my customers, Clovia. Clovia is the fastest growing online lingerie in India. And they already had built a bot with somebody else and it didn't work. And when we approached them, Pankaj, who's the founder, he's from, again, a tech guy. So he said that, look, Satish, all these things looks good. You know, I have seen this presentation probably many times over. We already failed with it. So, you know, everybody looks the same, right? How do I even know this will work? And why should I pay? Right?
Okay.
So from there, from that conversation about 2 years back to today, where we manage every aspect of the customer experience for them, right, across their channels, and we work with very, very closely as a partner to them, as a partner of their customer experience strategy, right, is a long way. And, it's probably about 18 months after we deployed. It took us that time. It took us that much of hard work and convincing. And of course, Pankaj is a great guy and Clovia team is also awesome. So they understand and they dig well. So that is a moment of pride of one customer that I would like to quote. The second one is a call center automation that we did through speech bots for Toshiba, the Japanese manufacturing brand in Dubai. Mm-hmm. So from a point where, again, they have also failed with another very large, well-known, reputed global brand. When we went and pitched, Santosh, who heads the Toshiba Middle East, said that, look, guys, we have already burnt our hands, so we don't even want to entertain this conversation. Okay.
Okay.
And there are a lot of complexities. You know, they were tied with a provider, so on and so forth. And right from a Middle East infrastructure problem, where you, in Middle East, I don't know if you're aware, you really cannot make a WhatsApp call or something. Everything is regulated. You can't have a VoIP.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know that, right? So from that stage, right, finding the right infrastructure to, figuring out how to deploy to working with the existing infrastructure provider for their call center where they're logged in, right, and to figuring out, probably 100 hacks of how to make it work, to today where, we run, literally we have replaced most of the agents that they had, and it's almost probably about 95% of the entire queries on speech on the call center are handled by Intentico's bots for Toshiba in the Middle East. Okay.
Oh, that's a huge success.
Yeah, so that's a great experience for us and a phenomenal learning. So that is one thing. Again, one common thread, right? If you want to be part of a great story with a client, you also need to pick up a great client, somebody who understands you, supports you, and is there. And
so valuable. It's mutual.
Yeah. Because without that, it becomes very difficult.
Okay, great. Yeah, you started as a product and which is more horizontal, which potentially benefits multiple domains. But later, your focus narrowed down to a vertical concentrating on automobile industry. What's the reason and what are the learnings from that decision?
Oh, tough question, Ashok. So one thing is, I think initially when we started, like I told you, Clovia was our first client, and then we moved on to Toshiba, then we had multiple small clients, so on and so forth. And over a period of time, we realized that we do not have the sales or marketing power. And being a horizontal, we have always been this, data science and tech heavy company. Talk less about customer benefits and more about the technology that we have. So that's the DNA of the company. So when we realized that, I can be a horizontal player across 1, 2, 3, 4 industries that we started with, your ability to do and ability to grow as a small company, right, unless you have massive amount of funding and focus, becomes very, very difficult, right? The second part that helped us was that we work with an anchor client in automotive industry for about, close to 1.5 years. And there were a lot of learnings. So when we went back, we looked at which are the industries that are already flooded. Like, you don't want to be the 10th guy or the 5th guy in an industry and compete for what? Right? See, even if you are technologically the best, to prove that you are technologically the best will take you a long time. Okay.
Yeah.
So we realized that one, the market is automotive as an industry is more a greenfield and very limited players, hardly one or two at a scale that we are talking about. B, the need for conversational AI, whether it is NLG or NLP or NLU or virtual agents, right? All of these are existing already, right? So it is we found it similar to how a typical Indian business starts. Something is offline, you make it an e-commerce and your chances of success are high, right? So that is the second part that helped us. The third one is the client and the kind of traction that we picked up on automotive industry started, it is evident. It is the market teaching you that, hey, look, this is where the opportunity is. This is where you are finding traction. This is where you are doing well. And this is where the greenfield is. Why not go deep, into that vertical and figure out why this vertical, how we can add more value to this vertical across with your cognitive AI products. And then, probably a year and a half, 2 years later, we can always look at the other industries once we are well established in one vertical. So that is how it happened. It's a product, it's a learning of market, it's a learning of our own experience with our anchor client, and it's a learning of what could have been the easier and smarter solution to build scale. So that's how it happened.
Okay, that's great. So you are helping multiple customers to adopt AI solutions, which in turn scales their businesses. How are you scaling your business? Any ideas to share? Any plans?
Got it. So one is we have always been a deep integrated platform and product company. And this is also one of the reasons why we had to pivot to a vertical PaaS company, because when you are everything for everyone, you need a lot of resources and time and a lot of maturity in the organization. So when we started focusing on the automotive as a vertical, there are probably about three or four players who does the CRM, who does their dealer management systems and so on and so forth, right? So it becomes very easy for you to focus and integrate with the existing players. And it becomes much scalable a solution because you just have to do it three times or you have to do it four times and you probably would have covered 70-80% of the market, right? That is one. The second one is while we are building, we are always conscious of scale to the next level, okay? Like I do not want to scale to a billion transactions in a month today when I don't see an opportunity of that today, right? Okay. Can it be a million transactions a month that we are looking at it? And are we finding it in the next 6 months? That is how I look at scale, right? Whether it's infrastructure, whether it is people, mm-hmm. whether it is process, right? For the next 6 months, am I well equipped on the best case scenario? And also making sure that, on the worst case scenario, you're not losing too much. You're not risking everything, right? So that's how we scale. Of course, all the processes are there. We are also on the path to becoming GDPR as well as CCPA compliant. So all these processes help.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, current generation students have a lot of learning options nowadays through online portals, YouTube, MOOC courses. Do you recommend students to get a job, work, and then later think about the business? Or you recommend to have a business mindset while they study before starting work in any company?
See, I really don't know the what advice to give here because to each his own. Somebody it works. We have seen, right, a lot of these college dropouts becoming, huge entrepreneurs, big successes. Then we also have seen people not doing very well and getting astray. So I think it is dependent on the personal thing. And if we are looking at, a general segment of advice, I think the customer, the student has to be very, very clear as to what he or she wants and at what stage. Okay. So if that is happening, that's when you would be sure. So for instance, I know a couple of people who were doing their second year engineering in NIT Trichy and dropped off to start building companies. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I also know people who have spent a decade plus or whatever and then, started building, right? So I don't know. There is no right or wrong answer. There is nothing absolutely. It depends on 100 other circumstances as to can you even survive, right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to build, I want to build a big unicorn or a decacorn, right? One, is your idea so powerful? Can you execute it? Do you find the product market fit? Is the timing right? Right? Do you have the right team? Are you seeing the traction? We don't know, right? So based on all these aspects is where somebody has to take a call rather than saying that, hey, I'm going to go and work and do it or something. We don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So I would not want to advise either ways because it is very unique and circumstantial. Can I take that risk at this moment or not? Right?
Yeah.
Can I afford to take risk? Yeah, absolutely, right. Yeah. I mean, if you're struggling to complete your studies or let us say if you're so weak in, something, right? I don't know if it is a wise move to, stop studying and start building this. I don't know the answer to that, right? So that's how
Yeah, genuine answer. Thank you. Yeah. So moving on to the next segment of this episode, rapid fire round.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What's the best thing that happened this month to you?
The podcast.
Oh, that's an honor. Thank you. Wonderful answer. Yeah. So your favorite leader whom you follow?
Many for different aspects. I don't have one single role model. A couple of streams I like, what Steve Jobs talks mm-hmm. about, couple of things that Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg. I like a lot of other spiritual leaders as well. So it's mm-hmm. it's not really one. I like a lot of authors, okay, of what okay. Their thinking has been, and it's pretty relevant. So there's not really one role model that I would wish to, but quite a lot. Sorry, it's a rapid fire. I can't talk so much. Go on.
No problem. Yeah. It includes the thought process as well. Yeah. So moving on. Your one childhood activity you still like to do?
I like to play badminton. That is something that I used okay. to as a child. And I listen to okay. Carnatic music. I'm an avid listener. And I only listen to Carnatic music. So both I continue okay. to do.
Nice. So what is your one habit you have to stay calm?
I don't have a particular habit because I think there is so much that has happened in my life that, there's nothing worse that this can happen. So yeah, it's fine. We have seen this through. This too shall pass. Okay. It is more like a stoic philosophy of a Gita. Like, you don't expect the results and, you have to do what you have to do. That's it.
Okay, nice. What does creativity mean to you in one sentence?
What does creativity mean in one sentence? Any problem that is uniquely solved with a value.
Okay, great. Yes. So how do you start your day?
I start my day actually with reading either a book or going through the news and then a bit of, stretches.
Okay, that's a great start. An article or book you recently read, which you liked it?
See, I keep reading every day, Ashok. So I don't know. A couple of things, many things stay with me. One of the things that I was reading is about, physics, mathematics, intersection, and how an ancient Indian system could devise the exact measurement distance between the planets and Earth and all that stuff, right? So it was very interesting for me to go through that mathematical equations and physics or Einstein's some laws or the time, the relativity of time in Earth versus something that is told in Puranas, and how do you equate it with mathematics and physics? I was just reading that article. It was very, very interesting. And, I kept digging into it. And at one point, okay. of course, you'll have time constraints and, knowledge constraints as well.
Very deep. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So if you want to go back and change one decision in your startup journey, what would that be?
If I have to go back, I think I'll go back to the first time that I started up. It's like about 2012-13 era. I would have been far more logical about the product market fit. That is one thing that I would have been done, rather than bullying my way through what I thought was a great product. So that is one thing. When I started, I thought that, hey, this is a great product. This is going to be phenomenally useful to the world and so on and so forth. And the timing of that, I would have really, really rechecked if I had to go back and check it. That's pretty much what I would have done.
Okay, nice. What's your retirement plan?
I really don't know, man. I mean, this is like out of the blue. This is really out of the blue. I don't have one. I never thought about it so far. I'm still a struggling, young entrepreneur.
Yeah. You are coming to us, yes.
You're talking about retirement. No, I don't know. I have zero plans. Okay. I have nothing. I don't know.
Really. I guess most of the entrepreneurs don't have a retirement plan, and that's the plan.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so great. So one tip to make your mentors available for you.
I think, one, you have to value what they bring into the table, and you have to convey to them that, let us say if I take an advice from somebody whom I consider as my mentor, and if I go back and implement, The first thing that you need to do is to make sure that you did it with the right spirit. And once you do it, go back and check with the result and have that theory validated or invalidated, whichever it is, right? So the feedback mechanism for a thought or an idea or an action plan that a mentor gives you is the kick that the mentor gets out of it, right? Did it work? Did it not work? And if it worked, why? And if it did not, why? Right? So that is one way of engaging. And when you engage at a thought level or at a, you know, intellect level, you will obviously get the time that you need from your mentors.
That's wonderful. That's the end of rapid fire. For people who don't know about you and your company, where should they look for?
If you are a technical person or no, I think I should start looking very differently. If you're somebody who can sell anything to anybody, probably should hit us up because we have always been lacking in sales and marketing. Companies that do not know us, our company name is Intentico. It's about human intent. I is the intelligence and Co is just a company. So it's Intentico. And what it does is for automotive industry as a vertical, we actually solve your customer engagement, marketing, as well as customer service and part of your dealer and other problems. So hit us up on our website, on our Twitter. You can talk to our bot on our website itself and, you know, engage with.
That's nice. Yes. Thank you for your valuable time, Satish. It was wonderful talking to you. Thank you.
My pleasure, Ashok. And thank you for a lovely set of questions, some comfortable, some very uncomfortable. Great talking to you.
Thank you. Okay, we are at the end of episode number 9. Thank you very much, Satish, for coming on and sharing all the insights. And to our listeners, you can find out the episode summary in the description. Until we catch up soon, stay tuned, be motivated. Thank you.